Wishers, well-doers, and whiz kids, welcome to Good Job Brain, your weekly quiz show and offbeat trivia podcast. This is episode 77, and of course, I'm your humble host, Karen, and we are your pensive podcasting pals partial to palindromes, paradoxes, and piranhas.
Ooh, you seem out of breath.
Thank you, pop filters.
I'm Colin.
I'm Dana.
And I'm Chris.
And today's show is brought to you by Squarespace, the all-in-one platform and online web tool that makes it fast and easy to create beautiful and sharp and smart-looking websites. You can use Squarespace for your personal site or blog or portfolio, but you can also use Squarespace for your business, and you can even make your own online store. We here at Good Job Brain have been using Squarespace since we launched. To be honest, my favorite part of the experience is their customer support. Okay, so do you guys know that feeling or that experience when you're in high school and you're writing a paper and then your computer crashes and you didn't save and you're like, oh no. So once I accidentally screwed up and deleted some stuff on Squarespace while making the Good Job Brain site, and the support team were so awesome and they were able to help me out super quick while I was freaking the F out. But you know that feeling. You're like, no.
Just that your stomach drops and that you're I'm going to be ill.
I made a mistake.
Like, how can I recover this? And I know there's probably no way, but maybe there's a miracle. And at that moment, the miracle was the Squarespace customer support. For a free trial and 10% off your first purchase on new accounts, go to squarespace.com/goodjobbrain, and you can use the offer code. We have a new offer code for this month. It's September. Happy September. Our new offer code is SNARGE. S-N-A-R-G-E. Dana's favorite word, which means
bird slurry.
What happens when a bird and
an airplane
collide?
And the airplane wins.
The bird smoothie is called SNARGE, S-N-A-R-G-E. And let's jump into our general trivia segment, Pop Quiz Hotshot.
On the way here to Collins, I stopped by a flea market and found something amazing that I thought was really going to be great for Good Job Brain, which is an old 1960s board game edition of Jeopardy!
Wow!
Yes, this predates even Alex Trebek.
Wow!
This board game was in basically brand new condition. It was all shrink-wrapped inside.
I could not believe the shape. You say the things hadn't even been opened up inside.
So we broke the shrink wrap. We popped it open. We have here questions from 1960s Jeopardy. And I've picked out a couple of categories. Some of these questions are going to be dated and no longer correct.
Hilariously so.
And some of them are going to call on knowledge that you could not possibly be expected to know. However, we're going to do it anyway.
Okay.
At least when we had our 80s trivia cards, at least we can kind of pretend to be in that mindset because we were either born or were alive in the 80s. This, I don't know.
You have to channel your inner Don Draper to try to get through this. So
I need a drink first.
Give me a martini.
The category is journalism. So for $100, in the newspaper industry, word for a personal credit. Colin.
Is that the byline?
A byline.
What is byline?
What is a byline?
Is it the byline?
Yes. It's like, okay. Henceforth, remember to answer in the form of a question.
That was kind of,
Here we go. The two leading news services. Colin.
What are the AP, the Associated Press, and the UPI?
Yes, you're absolutely right.
I was going to guess Reuters. What is UPI?
UPI is United Press International, and it used to be. It's still around, but it's very, very small and just sort of does little things now. But it used to be as big as the AP.
Wow.
As the Associated Press, which is still as big as it was. The answer is now Gawker and TMZ. Update this. Midwestern city that publishes The Plain Dealer. Colin.
What is Cleveland?
What is Cleveland? Yes, yes indeed.
What is that?
The Cleveland Plain Dealer. It is a newspaper.
P-L-A-I-N.
Yes.
Not airplane.
Right.
I was thinking like Boeing? Right. Like Plain Dealer Sky Mall?
Cleveland Aviation News and General Interest Publication.
I was like, it's really specific.
for $400 real dollars. The answer is the New York Times famous motto. The New York Times famous motto. Very well known. Dana?
What is all the news fit to print?
Yes, all the news that's fit to print.
That's very snappy.
Yep. And for $500, its last page used to be called Speaking of Pictures... Karen!
What is USA Today?
It is not USA Today.
I don't think that existed then.
It may not have.
Speaking of pictures.
Speaking of Pictures...
What is Life Magazine?
What is Life Magazine? That's it. Yep. Which ceased publication actually in the year 2000. It was a monthly for a while there. It held on. It really did.
It did.
Used to be an American institution, and now it is nothing. Okay, let's go to Double Jeopardy. The category is food for $200.
Yay!
Contents of the lower half of a double boiler.
Oh.
Karen.
What is water?
What is water? Yeah. Exactly, yes. Occupational hazard of a prize fighter. Karen.
What is cauliflower ear?
Cauliflower. Remember the categories?
Yeah. Okay, yes.
Food.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. This is great. I love this. In Spanish, it means chili with meat. Dana.
What is chile con carne?
Chile con carne. Yeah. Slightly more esoteric knowledge in gummy green vegetable used to make gumbo. Karen.
What is okra?
What is okra?
Yeah. Yes.
There may have been Dana who buzzed in, but Karen, Karen waved her buzzer in the air.
Dramatically.
It really got my attention.
I'm easily distracted.
Finally, TV Cook, for $1,000. TV Cook, who wrote The Art of French Cooking.
Dana. Who is Julia Child?
It is Julia Child, yes.
That's the last
question. I know, that was the hardest question. I don't know.
Maybe she's still new?
Maybe people didn't watch cooking shows as much back in the day. Well, that's your 60s Jeopardy for this week.
Wow.
If it proved to be a popular segment, we'll bring it
back. Not
bad. I greatly enjoyed that, yeah.
I thought it was going to be like, name the president who you're like, wait a minute.
I picked some categories that actually had questions that we could answer. Like, some of these are not. Some of the entire categories we would be just completely
like what?
On.
Like what?
Like the British Empire, if we were really good. some of the answers, like, who is Gypsy Rose Lee? I'm like, I don't know.
The stripper.
Oh, okay. Well, I mean, depending on, would you be able to get the answer, basically.
Sorry.
And then there's one called Cowboys and Indians that is offensive.
I was wondering.
It's just downright offensive.
All right.
All right. Good job, Brains. Thank you, Chris, and old-timey Jeopardy. So this episode is 77, episode 77. Did you guys know 77 is the smallest positive integer requiring 5 syllables?
Oh, 77. That's a good one.
Yeah, and then another cool fact about the number 77 is that during World War II in Sweden, at the border with Norway, 77, though, the word, was used as a password because it's one of the trickiest things to pronounce in Swedish. So they can then easily identify people whether or not they're native Swedish or Norwegian or German based on how they say 77.
Oh, I love that. I love stuff like that.
Yeah. I don't know what it is in Swedish, and I probably would garble it up, but there you go. And so this week, I don't think this will surprise anybody that I'm a big math nerd since I was a kid. I like numbers and I like math and I think it's really cool.
None of us are surprised. We knew.
Not surprised. Yeah. Nope. Not surprised. No.
So we thought this week would be a good episode on numbers.
Say what? I'm coming for that number one spot. Hey, keep it going, it won't stop. What you doing, man? I'm coming for that number one spot. Yes, indeed. Ludacris, I'm hotter than Nevada.
I used to watch Square One TV. Like, I know, you might be thinking, can you make a show about numbers interesting? Maybe we can, maybe we can't. But I used to watch Square One TV when I came home from school. And that was
a great
show about numbers. I did not like math as a kid, but I liked English. But, like, I loved Square One TV.
Square One's entertaining. It was a treat at school when the teacher wanted to give us a treat or they didn't prepare a lesson for the day.
That's right.
We would watch Square One.
Yep. Or if the teacher just wanted to put their head down on their desk for it. But either way.
As an adult now, I'm like, I could see that.
Basically, it was a variety / comedy skit show with lots and lots of music that was all about just like teaching basic mathematical concepts.
Oh.
And especially the really memorable thing. I mean, there were a lot of like cool segments, but the songs that they did were fantastic and they really stuck in your head. There was there's a song called 8% of My Love that teaches, it teaches percentages. But it is a Meatloaf parody. It is a parody of like Paradise by the Dashboard Light and other Meatloaf songs with the piano and everything. One of the great songs Dana actually brought up totally unprovoked was a great song called 999 when they sing about the fantastic number nine.
This times any number country, you can find song. It all comes back to nine.
And it is talking about the
that was the their best song.
the magical seeming property of the number nine.
Huh.
Is that if you multiply nine by times any number at all, and then take your answer and add up the digits, and then if you get a two-digit or a three-digit, whatever, however many digit answers, just keep adding them and adding them and adding them until you get to a single digit, it will always add up to nine.
Mm.
Oh.
Any multiple of nine. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
They didn't really explain it when, you know, in Square One TV, they just talk about how awesome it was. And it is awesome.
It is.
Because, as we know, when you're a kid and you're in math class, you're asked a lot to, like, what are the factors of this number? Like, is this number a multiple of this? Yep. Is it a multiple of that? And so a really good way of figuring out if the number was a multiple of nine is that, you know, if you calculated, if you added up all the digits, it would have to get to nine.
That one did seem magical to me. As I mean, even when I only could multiply, you know, up to two digits, it still seemed magic. I'm like, 18, 8 plus 1 is 9. That's incredible.
Yeah, it's amazing. And it's like, you know, you try to trick it, you know, write down, you write down like a 25-digit random number. It's like, well, surely this will ruin it all. And you spend an hour like adding and adding and adding and adding and adding, and then it's 9 again.
Yeah, yeah.
So when you're doing this, what you are doing is, it is called, you are taking the digital root of the number. That process of iterative summing until you get down to a single digit by adding, then adding again, is called taking the digital root.
Okay.
And these are actually pretty useful. Like, they contain information. The digital, knowing the digital root of a number tells you something. So, for example, another trick we might have learned in school is that the digital root of any multiple of 3 will be either 3, 6, or 9.
And that's how you know if a large number is divisible by 3.
Yep. The digital roots of successive multiples of 8. So the digital root of 8 is 8, right?
Mm-hmm.
8 times 2 is 16. The digital root of that is 7. Yeah. 8 times 3 is 24. Digital root of that is 6. The digital roots of
down.
The digital roots of 8 are 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, 9, 8, 7, 6, on into infinity. If you take a random huge sum, so let's say 465,135 plus 321,657 equals, because I did this in a calculator, 786,792. Take my word for it. The digital root of the first number is 6. The digital root of the second number is 6. And the digital root of 786,792, if you get it down to two digits, it's 12. If you start digital rooting anything in like a sum of numbers, the digital root equation that you get down to, you will get to something that is true.
Whoa.
Yep.
Oh.
This can be used as like a sanity check. If you're adding up like a whole bunch of different numbers, you can digital root them all and then add it up. And if it's true, it's a good indication that you did it right. And if it's not true, you have some issue with your math.
That's
shortcut.
Yeah, built-in error checking.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Yeah. It's not 100% accurate, apparently, but it's good enough that, like, it's a good thing to do. So, what is it about 9? Why is the digital root of any multiple of 9 9?
I'm wrapped here.
Okay, here we go. There's actually nothing special about 9. What is special about it is that we work in base 10.
Okay, yeah. Okay.
9 is one less than the base that we work in, right? Because we work with the ones column, tens column, hundreds column, computer counts in base 2, uses binary, right? What do we say to school kids to make it easier on them if I want to add 9 to a number? What do we tell them to do?
Add 10 and subtract 1.
Yeah. We tell them add 1 to the tens column and then subtract 1 from the ones column. So if you have like 18 and you want to add 9 to it, you subtract 1 from the ones column, 7, and then add 1 to the 10, 2. 18 plus 9 is 27. That's an easy way to add 9.
I still do this, by the way.
Sure. Oh, yeah, absolutely. When you add 9 to something, you never change the sum of the digits. The digits in that within that number are always going to be the same sum, because you're just deleting one from one column. Because remember, when you're adding up the digits, it doesn't matter if it's tens or hundreds or thousands or anything.
You're taking one away and adding one.
Yeah.
So it's going to, it's always, you're never changing the sum. So if you start with 9, what is multiplication? It's just adding 9 over and over and over again. So if you start with 9 and you keep taking away 1 and adding 1, it's always going to add up to 9, always. So if you're working in hexadecimal, base 16, 15 is the magic number.
Mm. Oh.
So every multiple of 15 in base 16 will always add back up to 15.
That makes so much sense.
Now this should explain 8, because when you add 8 to something, you take 2 away from the ones column and add one more.
That's why.
Hence, the digital root goes down, 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 down. The digital root of any positive integer shows you where that number is on the number line in relative position to the last multiple of 9. So, an example, 11, the digital root of 11 is?
2.
Two. It is 2 places after the last, after 9.
Oh.
The digital root of 21 is?
3.
It is 3 numbers after 18, the last multiple of 9. That will always be the case. So, we all know our multiplication tables, right? We're in grammar school, and they show us this big square, the checkerboard pattern, and the numbers 1 through 9 go down the side, the numbers 1 through 9 go across the top, and then within the checkerboard, they show you what those numbers multiply out to.
Mm-hmm.
If you were to make a multiplication table, but instead of putting the products of the multiplication, but instead put in the digital roots of those products, you get what is known as a Vedic square, V-E-D-I-C, old mathematical square. As you examine the Vedic square, you will find that if you look at each individual number and where it appears in the square, and you actually like play connect the dots with them, they all connect up to symmetrical geometric patterns. So like the 6s in the Vedic square, there's a cluster of them, then there's another symmetrical cluster of them, and you can join it up to create like a star type pattern within the square. A lot of Islamic art uses these patterns, the old Islamic art, because representational art, like you can't draw people, you know, according to some interpretations of the religion, you can't like draw people or animals or whatever. Like they do art that is abstract, but it is founded in mathematical formulas.
Right,
and a lot of the patterns are gotten from taking this Vedic square of digital roots and just joining up where the numbers meet.
Whoa! Pulling up the images! This is insane!
Third image there shows you like the locations of the numbers within the
square.
It's
like starburst. Oh, it's beautiful.
And the thing is, you can take
it.
And you can like join it up. It's like, oh, well, I'll take the pattern that emerges for 6 and the pattern that emerges for 3, and then I'll just draw that as one geometric shape. That will be a symmetrical shape.
Really,
and then
cool.
You can lay that on top of something else and use different colors. Yeah.
You can see why the early mathematicians like were just like this almost magical power that the numbers had, these like hidden patterns that you see. That is really cool. Mm.
All right, you math nerds. Oh, that's me. All right, you normal nerds.
Stop projecting.
I got a math quiz, and I think one of the reasons why I was so drawn to math as a kid is I'm a visual thinker, and I can visualize a lot of the things that math describes, like, dots on a graph or the shape when you rotate along this axis. Like, I can really picture it in sort of the volume and shapes and stuff. I have a cool mathematical shape quiz, and it really is cool. I'm not just saying that. And they're weird technical shape names, but they're shapes that you probably see every day.
Okay.
And didn't know the name.
Okay.
For example, and we've had this like I think twice on the show, the shape of a donut.
A torus?
Yes, is a torus.
I think of it as a bagel, but you know. Potato, potato.
All right. Brings back some memories. All right. Oh. The Sierpinski triangle is one of my favorite shapes. I remember actually I wrote a paper about it in 10th grade. It's a fractal, so parts of it can be repeated within itself. I might know it as a Sierpinski's triangle, but gamers might have seen a similar shape from a very famous video game franchise. What shape and video game am I talking about? Chris.
I think you're talking about the Triforce yes. Zelda. Okay.
The Triforce. And
it is. Yeah, you can repeat that design inside itself forever.
If you guys know Legend of Zelda, the Triforce, which is three triangles, one triangle on top and two triangles at bottom, and it looks like a big triangle together. If you keep repeating that in every single triangle, you get what is called a Sierpinski's triangle.
Oh, okay. Mm. It's really four triangles.
Well, one's in the negative space.
Yes.
Yeah, three in the positive space.
Well, five,
yeah.
Because then five, you have the big triangle.
But really infinite triangles.
All right. What is a radix? It's also called a radical symbol.
Oh. I was like, oh, that sounds familiar. What is it from?
Is it
the A with the circle around it?
It is the name of that weird check mark symbol when you write a root.
The little V with the extended tail.
Yeah.
Okay.
It's kind of like a check mark. The radical of a number.
Radix.
There you go.
Radix. Okay.
Hyperbolic paraboloid might sound super technical or like a medical disease, but thanks to this shape that this particular snack is able to snack on top of themselves very neatly.
Would that be Pringles potato chips?
Yes, Pringles.
Yes.
I need to know the mathematical name for when you have the inverted Pringles and make duck lips. We've all done that.
There should be a name.
Hyperbolic paraboloids.
Right, truncated hyperbolic paraboloid lips.
All right. Which game table in a casino can you see people tossing two regular hexahedrons? Colin.
That would be at the craps table.
The craps table.
Oh, come on, guys. This is a clean show.
A hexahedron is a 3D shape that has six sides, and a regular hexahedron is a cube, basically. Mm-hmm. Cube has six faces. This is my last challenge. So a three-sided shape is called a...
Triangle. We're all looking at trick questions.
Four-sided is called...
Quadrilateral.
Rectangle. Quadrilateral.
Quadrilateral. Yeah. Okay. Quadrilateral. Five-sided?
Pentagon.
Yeah.
We're all waiting for the one where you're going to trick us. Pentagon. I'll say it authoritatively. Yes. A five-sided figure is a pentagon. Yeah.
Six is a hexagon.
Hexagon.
Eight is a...
Octagon.
What is a seven-sided shape called?
Septagon.
Yeah. Septagon.
Incorrect.
No.
Is it a heptagon?
Yeah.
Oh, a heptagon.
Heptagon. Not a septicon.
I didn't...
It sounded like a septagon. Transformer.
I knew there was a thing called a heptagon, but I thought that maybe that was only in the
60s. So I have a very bad mnemonic to remember this.
Go on.
Hepcats?
Yes.
Like, you know, like, you're a cool hepcat. Uh-huh. Hepcats has seven letters. So it's a seven-sided.
Oh, okay.
But
it's cool. Hepcats.
Hepcats.
Not hepcat.
Well, you're like hepcat, that's six letters, six sides. That's a hexagon.
It presumes that you know hexagon and octagon.
Yeah.
All right. What about a nine-sided shape?
This I definitely am not going to get wrong. It's a nonagon.
Yeah. Yes. Okay. It is. Nonagon.
Mm-hmm.
It's fun to say.
Good job, you guys. That was my quick math shape quiz.
That was good.
That was pretty cool.
That was good.
Okay, I'm going to talk about numbers you see all the time, if you don't interact with necessarily all the time, but you definitely see them all the time. Phone numbers. I haven't memorized any phone numbers
for
in so
long.
Long.
Yeah, I mean, in the days since you just entered in your phone memory.
I'm nervous. I think about memorizing something all the time. I should.
Like, I know my phone number. I think that's it.
I know my phone number and the phone number of the house where I grew up.
I know.
and not many more past that.
I know my best friend in high school's parents' phone number. Like, I was like, I could just call them, I guess, if something happens.
I know the old customer service number for Nintendo.
Neither here nor there. Right?
Yeah, it'll still help you.
I know 510-841 West, which is the pizza place that we use to order pizza from.
So something happens to your phone. You can still get pizza. So the format of the 10-digit phone number in America is three numbers, then three numbers, and then four numbers.
Yeah.
The first three numbers are the
area code.
And the second three numbers are the
exchange.
Yes.
Oh, what? Okay, yeah.
And the last four are just the number. Area codes were established in 1951. They were originally called North American Numbering Plan. There were under 90 codes when they first did it. and they dished it out by population density. So if you were in a really densely populated place, you had a number like a 1 or a 2. And that was because we used to actually have to dial a phone. Mm-hmm. Like there was a little rotary dial on it. You put your finger in it and you drag it all the way around.
That's the fastest dial.
Yes. Okay.
So if you were in a big place, you had the best numbers. Nice. You had the fastest.
Yeah. New York City was 212, right?
Yeah. Or, LA was 213. Right, Chicago was 312. Like because of convenience.
You have to so you don't have to pull your finger too far around to call the most popular numbers.
Yeah. What's the exchange?
Okay, so the exchange consists of two letters that correspond to where you reside, your town code or your location code.
No way.
I Love Lucy or old TV shows, they would be like Klondike 549 or KL. So it's KL are the letters. I'm in Klondike, but I'm in District 4, so it's KL4. And then the last four are your actual phone number or the number that you get. And that's why there are letters on the phone number, is because they correspond to your exchange. And now people use them to spell out words or whatever.
Well, I'm guessing it was easier to remember, to just remember the name of the exchange and then five numbers instead of just having to remember seven numbers.
That's why they did it that way. They were using the names because they thought people wouldn't be able to remember seven digits. Like it helped make it easier to remember how to connect with people. But they moved away from it. It was a pain to do. So they just moved to translating all those names into the numbers that they corresponded to on the phone thing.
Okay.
It wasn't until 1991 that the exchange part of phone numbers would have a 0 or a 1 in the middle. And that had to do with the letters, because there's no letters on the 0 or 1. Yeah. And those corresponded to your neighborhood. So there were no neighborhoods that had just one.
Yeah,
letter.
You're
so,
right. I never even thought about that.
Can you guess what the most expensive phone number is? Somebody sold for $2.7 million.
Whoa.
Okay. The most expensive phone number ever sold.
Yeah.
My first thought was it was like 1234567, but that couldn't be because they didn't have a 1.
It's got to be 1-800-SEX-TALK or something like that.
I was going to guess all 8.
Oh, that's a good guess.
Because
all 8.
Because in the Chinese culture, 8 means to get rich or to get wealthy. So a lot of numbers
that's
are
a good
lucky
guess.
If it's all 8.
It could be
8.
All 7s too.
You guys are totally on the right track. It's all 6s. It was sold in Qatar.
Great.
And it's funny you say 8 because legend has it that Steve Wozniak had the phone number that was all 8s. He likes all the stuff. He likes repeating numbers. So this is part of the legend, and he decided not to have that phone number anymore because he'd get prank calls, like 100 prank calls a day.
Sure. Yeah.
Just somebody pushing 8 a bunch of times and calling him.
Steve, you're refrigerating.
the prank within a prank.
Yeah. All right, we're going to take a quick break. A word from our sponsor.
Hey, kids.
Yeah.
Ready to rock the internet with your own totally electrifying website?
Electrifying.
Get ready for Squarespace. For your blog, for your portfolio, for your cat photography.
Cat photography.
Totally rad and easy website building tools that anyone can jam to.
Jammin'.
Free yourself with this free trial. No credit card needed. Free domain registration with an annual subscription. Go to squarespace.com/goodjobbrain and use the code SNARGE.
SNARGE!
Squarespace!
Welcome back. You're listening to Good Job Brain. This week we're talking about numbers.
So let me ask you guys a question about Roman numerals.
All right.
This is not going to be our super tricky one. I mean, we do get these, though, at pub quizzes.
This is like a crossword staple.
The year 2013 in Roman numerals. You know, we get those.
Always in the bottom corner of the crossword puzzle where they just run out of words. And it's just like Roman numeral meaning 58.
You know, these days, Roman numerals is pretty much in movie credits or when they're filling up space in the crossword.
Yep.
So just very quickly, we do a quick quiz here. There's nothing difficult. I mean, you guys know what the Roman numeral for 4 is.
Sure.
IV.
Sure. And you know what the Roman numeral for 10 is.
Yes.
Right. Okay, you get it. And then, you know, there's M and L and C and D. We go on.
All those.
Do you guys know what the Roman numeral is for 0?
What?
There is none because there was no 0.
That's right. This was a Chris Kohler trick question. The Romans did not have a numeral that indicated 0. Mm-hmm. And it's not as unusual a phenomenon as you might have once thought. A lot of the ancient numbering systems didn't consider 0 a number. And it sounds really hard to get to kind of wrap your mind around the idea.
It's like a philosophical kind of arguments. Like,
well, there's nothing to count.
It's not philosophical. It's really grounded in reality. Like, what are you using numbers for? You're using numbers to carve on a stone tablet how many sheep you sold the farmer next door. Well, you can't sell him no sheep. So why are you even writing? You're not going to write in a... Yeah, well, you're not going to give him a blank tablet either.
That's totally right. And, you know, the numbers and numerals were things for tallying and commerce and keeping track of sheep and, you know, maybe how many taxes you owed and things like that. But if you're just doing really, really simple, not even math, but just simple basic recordings of numbers, the idea of a nothing or a void, it didn't rise to the level of having a symbol, a consistent symbol, let's say, to represent that, because you weren't using numerals to do advanced math.
That makes sense.
You know, there are a lot of cultures, the ancient cultures, where they would have symbols that were, they were just sort of placeholders, you know, and you wouldn't say that it came before one. It's just, oh, I'll just make a mark here to indicate nothing here. As you say, Karen, it really was philosophical, and like the Greeks, the ancient Greeks would have, this was an intense issue for them, is zero a thing? You know, are numerals name things out in the universe, but how can a something be a nothing? And it was beyond just a matter of recording digits down. And they didn't have it. The Greeks did not have a zero in the sense that we talk about a zero. Romans didn't have it. You know, part of it was because they didn't have, you know, positional numbering system. So, like, you know how we've got like our tens column, our ones column.
Right.
Right. And that was part of it. But there were even cultures like the Babylonians that had positional numeral systems, and they didn't necessarily consider a number as a zero. They would have placeholders or just a little mark to indicate nothing here. And just as an prevention here, the Romans, they did have notation for it. They would write nulla, the word nulla, you know, meaning like nullify,
not
same
like
word.
A symbol.
But it wasn't a symbol, it wasn't a mark, right? It was more just, hey, I know there's nothing here.
It would be totally awesome if they drew little cat heads. Oh, I guess then that might mean a tally for a cat.
Yeah.
This has been a word from your actually prevention squad.
It was the early Indian mathematicians that it seems like were the first ones that came up with, this is a number. It's not just a quantity or an abstract placeholder. We'll come up with a specific, consistent
digit.
Number. Right. That is a digit. That's right. Mm-hmm. And they were. It looks like we trace back to about the 9th century. They have inscriptions of small circles in Indian mathematics that became zero. It seems so simple, and yet it's so complicated in another way that once you allow yourself to think of zero as a number, you can open up to a lot more complicated types of mathematics.
Right.
For example, try multiplying LXVI by VI, you know?
Yeah.
This posed a problem.
Right.
So you need a positional system, and you need something to hold the place for zero that can be treated like a number.
Yeah.
So, you know, as we briefly touched on earlier in the show, you know, a lot of early Islamic mathematicians made crazy strides in terms of advanced math, and they in turn were inspired by a lot of Indian and Hindu mathematicians. And so that tradition, we think, came from the early Indian mathematicians through the Islamic world, and from then on into the European world.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't until the 12th century in Europe that the use of a consistent single mark, meaning zero as a number, became widespread.
What do they use?
They would leave nothing. It would be an open column to indicate an empty quantity. There wasn't anything that they could manipulate as a number like a 4 or a 7 to do complex things like algebra, you know, which incidentally is an Arabic word, algebra.
Mm-hmm.
So along with a lot of other concepts, we got that through that tradition. So it's just one of those things, again, we talk about things you take for granted. And when I first read this, it kind of blew my mind of, all right, zero is a quantity but not a number, that this was a big issue once upon a time.
Don't they talk about the Mayas and invented zero or something, the Mayan calendar?
The Mayan calendar would have, and there were other cultures that would have consistent marks for it to say, you know, this is a placeholder for the quantity, but they wouldn't do the kind of interactive mathematics using it as a digit that we're talking about.
Okay.
Yeah.
I always thought algebra, growing up, I thought it was like a bra made out of algae.
Like a mermaid top.
Oh,
mermaid underwear.
What do you call them?
That's
a mermaid
okay.
top?
Algebra. Algebra.
Yeah.
That is.
What does a nerdy mermaid wear under
algebra?
Wow.
Dear Laffy Taffy. Karen, age 31.
Yeah. I know. No, it's not from children. Okay, here is a quiz I've always wanted to do this quiz, and this gives me the good opportunity to actually do it. We could spin this out into a series. Should it prove popular?
Wow.
Should it become a hit mathematically?
Listener.
Yes. I'm calling this quiz, I Forgot What I Was Supposed to Remember, which is, I'm going to give, there's a lot of mnemonics in the math world to remember certain math things, taking a very abstract series of numbers and turning it into a memorable sentence or something along those lines. So I'm going to give you the mnemonic, and you tell me what this math mnemonic is supposed to help you remember.
Okay.
Sometimes it's easier to remember the mnemonic than the thing that you're supposed to remember, yes.
Okay.
So we'll start with one that you might remember from grammar school. Please excuse my dear Aunt Sally. Colin, maybe, well, I don't know. You both buzzed in at the same time, and you both look the same amount of not sure.
It's about
I'm sure.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Okay.
PEMDAS. Oh, okay. Well, Karen. Yeah. PEMDAS. Yeah.
PEMDAS. It's the order of operation.
It is. Right. Yes.
Parentheses, yes. Like exponents.
Exponents.
Oh, okay. Yeah. I couldn't remember what the E was. That's why
Yes. Okay. Yeah. To tell you when you have a
division
addition, subtraction. To tell you that when you have a lengthy series of mathematical equations or a big mathematical equation, what order you have to work it in first to get to the correct answer. Yes. Please excuse my dear Aunt Sally. Okay. King Henry died by drinking chocolate milk. Karen.
Oh, no, I'm thinking about, I thought it was Animal Kingdom.
Yeah, Kingdom
Final. Oh, Kingdom Final, no. Yeah, King Henry died by drinking chocolate milk. That is.
That's the multiples of tens in the prefix, like kilo.
Yeah,
kilo,
hecto, deca, base, deci, centi, milli.
Oh, okay. Mm.
Yes.
Okay.
King Henry died by drinking chocolate milk. Kilo, hecto, deca, base. Now, some mnemonics use units or U because there is no word for
it. So B is just by itself?
Yeah, by.
Okay.
Deci, centi, milli.
Mm.
Okay. Here's a really short one. Some kids have trouble with this and they need a mnemonic for it. Nice doggy.
Nice doggy.
Dana.
Numerator, denominator.
Numerator, denominator. Which one is on top? Which one is on the bottom? ND. Nice doggy.
Nice doggy.
Numerator, denominator.
That is helpful. I wish young Colin knew that one.
I value xylophones like cows dig milk. Said by a real lover of xylophones. Karen?
This is Roman numerals.
It is Roman numerals. IVX, LCDM, 1, 5, 10, 50, 100, 500, 1,000. Mm-hmm. I value xylophones like cows dig milk.
This is a good twist on mnemonics. We're just kind of backwards figuring
that's
it out.
That's right, yeah. This is a mnemonic. This might be tough, but maybe you've heard this one before. So the mnemonic is 5 tomatoes. 5 tomatoes.
5 tomatoes.
It's a unit conversion. It's a certain unit conversion. Dana.
Is it 5,000?
No, it's a certain unit conversion, and it tells you, like, when you're converting this unit of measurement to another unit of measurement, a helpful way of remembering it would be 5 tomatoes.
Not a meter.
It's
not. So, do you know how many feet there are in a mile off the top of your head?
5,280?
Yes.
Yeah.
So if you remember 5280. So when you're thinking of feet in a mile, just think about 5 tomatoes.
Oh.
5280s. 5280.
Oh,
5280 feet in a mile.
That is not bad, right? That is good.
Okay.
I've just been memorizing like a sucker.
Some old hippie caught another hippie tripping on acid. Karen!
A more common one is Sakatoa.
Yes.
Which is, it's sine, cosine, and tangent.
Yes. Finding the sine, cosine, and tangent based on angles in a right triangle. You can remember Sokotoa, Sokchatoa, but if that's tough, you can just remember some old hippie caught another hippie tripping on acid.
That's pretty good.
Not bad, right?
That's pretty good.
Okay, here is a mnemonic. The mnemonic is, a rat in the house may eat the ice cream. This is to help you remember something mathematical related that a lot of kids typically have trouble with. Just remember, a rat in the house may eat the ice cream.
Mmm. Rat in the house.
Karen.
How to spell arithmetic.
That is correct. Oh. Jotted down a piece of paper, yes. A rat in the house may eat the ice cream. The first letters of the word spell arithmetic properly.
Weird thing to need to remember.
Well, I mean, if you think about it, it comes up a lot on spelling tests, and you might get it wrong as like arithmetic.
Right.
Arithmetic.
Right.
May I have a large container of coffee? Colin.
That is a mnemonic for digits of pi.
It certainly is, yes.
Wow.
That gets you pi to seven digits by counting the...
The number of letters in each
in
word.
Each word. Mm-hmm.
Yes. May I have a large container of coffee? That is 3, 1, 4, 1, etc. And those are your mnemonics.
Wow.
Thank you for helping
fun.
Me to remember what I had to remember.
All right, we are counting down to the end of the show, and we got one last quiz segment from Colin.
Yes, we do. You guys know who really loves numbers.
Who?
Robots.
Yes.
Yes, so it is time once again for Elvis, the electronic lyrical
interpretation
system. Man, I think we get sloppier each time. I think that we would actually get tighter.
We should respect Elvis. Sorry, Elvis.
Yes. Yeah. Elvis, of course, is our computerized.
If this is like an all binary round. Super angry.
I've converted every song to binary.
It's going
to
be like 2 hours long. 0, 1, 0, 0, 1, 0.
Get out your pens.
I don't know, Colin. I give up.
Elvis, of course, will be computerized, synthesized voice speaking opening lines of hit songs, famous songs, in his inimitable way.
Okay.
So today, in the spirit of numbers, all of the songs have numbers in the title. So there's a theme.
Awesome.
Yes.
Right.
So just remember that. And what I'm looking for is the name of the song and also who performed the song.
It'll be what be a very annoying thing for us to do is to just predict what all the songs are going to be.
That's what I was thinking. I was thinking
99.
Then you're,
No,
that would be a very annoying thing to do, yes.
You're right.
I got told.
You are correct.
But everybody's thinking about it now.
They're getting ready.
Okay, here we go.
Jenny, who can I turn to? You give me something I can hold on to. I know you think I'm like the other before, who saw your name and number on the wall.
Chris.
I believe the song title is Jenny and then in parentheses 8675309.
Close enough.
It's
actually inverted. Yes.
Okay.
8675309 slash Jenny.
Yeah. And that is by Jay Giles Band?
No. Dana?
Tommy Two-Tone.
Yes.
Like a Dick Tracy
which
gangster.
Also has a number in its name.
Oh,
were you going
that
for
was
that?
Intentional. Yes. Yes.
Well, it's
good
T-U.
Catch, Chris.
It's T-U tone.
Yeah, T-U-T-O-N-E. Here we go. Next one.
Is it getting better? Or do you feel the same? Will it make it easier on you now? You got someone to blame.
Karen.
One by U2.
Correct.
Which also has... Two.
It does.
Oh, hey.
It does. Yeah. It does. Good job. Moving right along.
Tumble out of bed and I stumble to the kitchen. Pour myself a cup of ambition. Yawn and stretch and try to come alive.
I think that was Dana.
9 to 5.
It is 9 to 5.
Dolly Parton.
By Dolly Parton.
I jogged to that song before work.
From the movie of the same name, of course. A little bit of a more up-tempo hit.
It feels like a perfect night to dress up like hipsters and make fun of our exes. It feels like a perfect night for breakfast at midnight to fall in love with strangers.
This song is so familiar. What song is
this? This is a very recent hit.
Yes.
By a very young female singer. Dana.
It's Taylor Swift. Is it 22?
Yes.
Yeah.
Taylor Swift. Here's a big hit from the 1980s.
You and I in a little toy shop. Buy a bag of balloons with the money we've got. Set them free at the break of dawn. Till one by one they were gone.
Dana again.
99 red left. balloons.
balloons. Like the mashup. Yeah, yeah. 99 that was balloons. The English version. So 99 red balloons.
Or 99 left balloons.
Right. That was yeah. that was the German. Original version. Right.
By Nina.
Correct.
I thought Elvis was gonna sing in German. I'd be like, I know what it is.
He's not that smart. Yeah. He doesn't have that module. Yeah. All right. This is a little tricky here, but I think you guys have enough information. This is a number one hit from 1955.
Some people say a man is made out of mud. A poor man's made out of muscle and blood. Muscle and blood and skin and bones. A mind that's weak and a back that's strong.
Oh my god, Nightmare.
That was, first of all, that was really good rhythmic talking on Elvis's part for that one. That song is 16 tons.
Correct.
I do not know.
Made famous by Tennessee Ernie Ford.
Yes.
Oh, okay.
That's such a good song.
It is a good, just solid song.
Man.
All right, last one here, guys. We'll close this out. You guys ready for some slow jams? Here's a slow jam.
Candlelight and soul forever, a dream of you and me together. Say you believe it. Say you believe it.
That was a hit from the 1990s.
Oh my god.
Karen.
What is it?
Oh my god. To Become One,
that
Spice
is
Girls.
To Become One by the Spice Girls. Yeah.
Nice.
Yeah.
I'm hitting myself.
It just sucks all
that?
The soul right out of the song.
When to become one.
It's a good song.
Well done, team. Well done.
Thanks, Elvis.
And thanks, Elvis.
Thanks, Elvis.
All right, and that's our number show. Thank you guys for joining me, and thank you guys, listeners, for listening in. Hope you learned a lot about nothing in the form of zero. Phone numbers and mnemonics and a bunch of cool stuff about math. You can find us on iTunes, on Stitcher, on SoundCloud, and also on our website, goodjobbrain.com, and check out our sponsor at squarespace.com/goodjobbrain. And thank you, and we'll see you guys next week.
Bye.
Bye.
Bye.